When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello, I'm Matt Chorley, and this is Politics Without the Boring Bits. Coming up on today's episode, an extraordinary story of the Tory MP, the 3 a.m. phone call, and the drunk dog. We'll unpack the whole thing for you, and we'll ask, is this the sleaziest parliament ever? In The Columnist, Manveen Rana and Matthew Paris tackle that story, and what sort of Prime Minister would Keir Starmer make? Would he be better or worse than every Prime Minister back to Tony Blair? We've got some exclusive polling. And don't forget, if you like what you hear on the podcast, you can join me for Politics Without the Boring Bits live on Times Radio, on your DAB radio, on your smart speaker, or download the Times Radio app. That's Politics Without the Boring Bits, weekdays from 10. Now, I'm calling it. Enough is enough. The media frenzy's gone on too long. A prominent politician being hounded by the press for something they may or may or not have done a long time ago. Manufactured outrage, endless column inches, wasting police time, all whipped up by political point-scoring pundits instead of focusing on the big issues. So enough, no more. We're not going to keep banging on about it. Do we really expect to hold up politicians to such a high standard? Which of us? Let's be honest. In the same situation, in the same shoes, which of us hasn't found ourselves asking a 78-year-old woman to raid her personal license to pay off some bad people at 3 a.m, having previously kicked over chairs and poked people at a Catherine Jenkins concert and been forced to deny getting a dog drunk, presumably on two dogs? It's easily done. It's easily done. Be honest, which of us hasn't done it? So enough. Let's draw a line under it and say no more about it. It is an extraordinary story. A 3 a.m. phone call from a Tory MP saying he'd been locked up by bad people and needed money. Allegations of a misuse of campaign funds, misbehaving at a Catherine Jenkins concert, and a drunk dog. All allegations against Mark Menzies, the MP for Fylde, who's now lost the Conservative whip after the Times published claims he'd used political donations to cover medical expenses and pay off those bad people. He strongly disputes the allegations. Well, if you haven't heard of Mark Menzies, he was elected in 2010. He was appointed as a junior aide to ministers, but resigned then in a scandal back in 2014, and he's been on the backbenches ever since. Here he is in 2022, having a go at the then business secretary, Jacob Rees-Mogg, over the Liz Truss government plan to lift the ban on fracking.
There's nothing Luddite about the people of Lancashire or of Fylde. And I just want to start by saying, Mr. Speaker, how disappointed I am that Parliament was not informed about this before the media, that as a local member of Parliament, I was not given the courtesy, despite having requested for 2 weeks contacting the honourable member to get information via his PPS. I've sent letters, I've sent WhatsApps, nothing back.
That was Mark Menzies speaking in 2022. He doesn't speak in the Commons very often, and he didn't speak in the Commons at all in December. There might be a reason for that. Let's bring in Billy Kemba, the senior investigations reporter at The Times, who broke this story. Billy, walk us through it, because it's quite easy for us to leap to what so-and-so's saying and this, that and the other. Walk us through what happened one night in December.
Well, yes, as you say, let's start there with this extraordinary phone call. It's 3:15 in the morning at the start of December, and Mark Menzies rings his former campaign manager. She's a 78-year-old woman. He tells her that he's fallen in with bad people. They've locked him in a flat. They won't let him out unless he pays them £5,000. And he asked her to transfer that money from a fund that she is a signatory on, which is a campaign fund. It's money from donors that's been given towards his campaigning expenses. She refuses to do that, but his office manager ultimately hands him the money from her own personal savings, and she is then reimbursed from that campaign fund. And this incident brings to light eventually a whole load of transactions from that campaign fund to Mark Menzies' personal bank account. We know of at least four other instances where thousands of pounds was transferred from that campaign fund to Mark's own bank account, and he then used those to pay personal medical expenses.
And so what's happened to that money? He hasn't repaid that money. So it's money donors, local business people, put money in a fund for his re-election and political campaigning. That money's come out and he's had that money for medical expenses and this weird phone call in the middle of the night. What's he saying about that money and whether or not that was the right thing to have done?
So I had a conversation with a source close to Mr. Menzies, who has said that he offered to repay the £6,500, which is what that £5,000 demand rose to as time went on, but was told by local conservatives he didn't need to, and that he hasn't repaid the other money. He said it was the suggestion of the local conservatives, although this is disputed, that he used the money for his personal medical expenses. And this source sought to make an argument that was a valid use of the funds, that anything that benefits the MP is a legitimate use. Donors who actually gave the money, who I've spoken to, gave a very different view.
And so what is the law around this? How far can you stretch somebody thinking they're giving money to a political candidate to help them get re-elected? How far can you stretch that in terms of what that money can be used for?
Well, there's certainly potential fraud here. I mean, taking money that has been given for one purpose and using it for another purpose can amount to fraud. Obviously, it depends on the exact circumstances and is ultimately a judgment for lawyers. But that's the sort of level of seriousness that this could rise to.
Well, in fact, today, Labour have said the police should investigate these allegations of Mark Menzies' misused campaign funds. This is Shadow Leader of the Commons, Lucy Powell, speaking in the Commons.
There's a worrying pattern here of cover-up and inaction. So can she shed some light? What and when did the Chief Whip, Prime Minister and Party Chairman know? Yeah. Why did it take the publication of the story today for the Whip to be removed?
Yeah. Do you know the answer to that question, Billy? Because clearly you've discovered that the Conservative Party, the Chief Whip, Simon Hart, had known about this for a while.
Yeah, so we know that he was first informed about these allegations right at the start of January, 3.5 months ago, that he's had multiple conversations with people involved, that CCHQ and people there have also had conversations, that they've been sent bank statements and other evidence. They've had all of this information for a long time. Why this investigation has taken so long and why there was no action until we published, it's not possible to answer. I'm sure there'll be plenty of questions about it from Labour and others.
Well, let's have a listen then to this. This was the response then from the Cabinet Minister, the Leader of the Commons, Penny Mordaunt.
The Honourable Lady mentioned some very serious allegations and other incidents that came to light during the course of the recess. These are very serious matters, and some of them are under police investigation. She wouldn't expect me to comment on that.
So what is under police investigation?
So I think that may be a reference to the honey trap scandal instead of these allegations. But as far as we're aware at the moment, there isn't a police investigation. But Labour are asking the Conservatives why they haven't gone to the police and whether they'll be going today. So that may change imminently.
And just to complete this incredible tale, Catherine Jenkins and a drunk dog.
Yes. So Catherine Jenkins, there was a Last Night of the Proms concert in his constituency last August, and according to eyewitnesses, he was very drunk at this concert, that he was unhappy that seats hadn't been reserved for him in the front row and he had to sit in the second row, and he kicked the seats in front and poked the people sitting in those seats and generally made a nuisance of himself. A source close to him has admitted that he had a bit to drink, has denied that they deliberately poked anyone. They've claimed that perhaps that was when they were waving flags as part of this concert that they accidentally poked the row in front.
Right, OK. So there's a pattern of behaviour emerging. And then how on earth does this story get into a dog ending up drunk?
So the drunk dog is just an incident that sort of sits in Mark Menzies's past. He was questioned by police about this. The allegation was that he deliberately got a friend's dog drunk, which he strenuously denied, and the police cleared him. As you say, there is a pattern of behaviour, an earlier expose in a Sunday newspaper about allegations that he paid for sex with a male escort and taken drugs and asked the escort to buy drugs. Instances of chaotic behaviour.
As we should say that in a statement, Mark Menzies has said, "I strongly dispute the allegations put to me. I fully complied with all the rules for declarations. As there's an investigation ongoing, I would not be commenting further." And the Conservative Party said they were investigating allegations made regarding a member of the public. The process is rightfully confidential. The party takes all allegations seriously and will always investigate any matters put to them. Billy, thanks for taking us through all of that. Billy Kember, The Times' senior investigations reporter, who broke the story last night. Like I said, Mark Menzies has been allowed to relinquish the whip, which is slightly different to the others who've had the whip suspended or withdrawn. It's interesting as well because neighbouring MPs in that part of the world, in Lancashire, have found themselves in trouble. Scott Benson ended up resigning. There's a by-election going on there right now after he was caught again in a Times investigation offering to lobby MPs. Paul Maynard, a government minister, allegations of misuse of funds in the Sunday Times, which again he denies. But earlier I spoke to the Tory MP, John Hayes, and I asked him why there were just so many of these sorts of stories surrounding Tory MPs.
Parliament has got 650 people in it, and I can tell you that the overwhelming majority of them, I mean, just these are very exceptional cases, and the overwhelming majority of them are determined to do their best for their constituents, and that's what I've always tried to do, and so I don't want every member of parliament to be affected by the kind of things you describe. But let's not comment on the individual case until we know more. We've heard the evidence and seen what the truth of it is, because these things are often rather different when you examine them more closely.
There have been lots of other cases, though, John. You've been an MP for a long time. You've seen these things come and go. You first arrived in 1997. You were involved in politics before then. Is this a sleazier time in politics, do you think?
Well, you'd have to gauge that. You'd have to look back to previous ages, wouldn't you? You'd have to look at the 20th century, the 19th century, the 18th century. Now, if you did that, I think you'd see some pretty colourful characters and some fairly alarming stories, actually. So I wouldn't want to make that judgment. I think it's just what's now's now, and people sometimes forget what happened in the past and glamorise that. So I think we'd have to do a fairly detailed piece of analysis. It's a PhD subject, isn't it? A thesis that to look at whether the 20th century, the 21st century, the 19th or the 18th had more of the kind of things you're describing.
But what is going on in that part of the world? Mark Menzies is the MP for Field. In neighbouring Blackpool South, Scott Benson resigned after he was exposed by the Times, offering to lobby ministers in exchange for cash. There's a by-election there next month. In Blackpool North, the Sunday Times revealed that Pensions Minister Paul Maynard has been accused of using taxpayers' money to fund Conservative Party work and campaigning. He's told the paper he believes he had the proper arrangements in place. Well, let's now speak to somebody who knows this part of the world very well. Paul Berenson is a journalist, a former news editor for the Blackpool Gazette, and joins us now. Hi, Paul.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
How is Mark Menzies known as a local MP?
It's an interesting question. So while we have this story in the national media, then it's got to be remembered that in the context of the local area in which he is, He seems very popular with voters. He was first elected, I believe, in 2010, consistently being re-elected with quite considerable majorities. So he is viewed as someone who is clearly well-trusted by voters, well-liked, and he's got a history of campaigning for local issues. So this paints a very different picture of him to perhaps what many local voters might see day to day.
It's interesting, though, because this isn't the first time that stories have emerged about him and his behaviour. But it's interesting that you'll say that actually he was quite well-liked locally.
Yeah, absolutely. You're quite right to say this isn't the first story that perhaps he would have preferred not to run, shall we say, appearing in the national news. And yet it doesn't seem to dent his popularity locally. Like I say, you know, if you look at those election results, they are quite convincing over the years, you know, consistently coming back with five-figure majorities.
And yeah, so like you said, he was elected in 2010, became a sort of parliamentary bag carrier, ministerial bag carrier. But in 2014, he was caught up in a sex and money scandal. A Brazilian rent boy told the Sunday Mirror the MP had paid him for sex and asked him to buy illegal drugs. Santos claims, Rogério Santos claimed that Mendes had taken drugs on previous occasions. He resigned, but insisted the claims were untrue. And he would set the record straight in due course, but he hasn't held ministerial role since. What's going on in that part of Lancashire, though? To lose one MP would seem as bad luck. To lose, to have three caught up in scandals of varying kinds, Paul. But people in Lancashire must be wondering what they've done.
I think that's probably a fair question. You do sometimes look at these news and think, oh, right, what now? Obviously, your colleagues have paid close interest to our part of the world. And yeah, these stories do keep emerging. But like I say, Mr. Mendes in particular is one who seems really popular amongst his voter base. This isn't the first, I think, tale of woe was the phrase you used, but, you know, like I say, there's obviously a lot of support for the work he does do, and he was known for a wide range of local issues. You know, you remember things like fracking, that was such a huge issue in Fylde, and there were real concerns locally about the impact that would or wouldn't have. And I think his record on that, he was quite outspoken at times, and I think things like that, those local issues, seem to be what voters are paying more attention to at the moment.
Paul, good to speak to you. Paul Pevenson there, the former news editor of the Blackpool Gazette. As well as all this, though, it's alleged that in 2017, Mark Menzies was interviewed by police over accusations he deliberately got someone's dog drunk and that the dog required emergency veterinary treatment. A source close to Mark Menzies denies he'd given the dog alcohol and instead it got stuck into a bottle left on the grass. But as a dog owner, I wondered if you could even get a dog drunk. Well, that's who better to ask than Beverly Cuddy, the editor of Dogs Today. Hello, Beverly.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Now, I've seen there were videos on social media and things where if you get a dog to lick a lemon, they sort of pull a face that they don't. I can't even get my dog to do that. Is it possible to get a dog drunk?
Sadly, it is, mainly because they don't need to drink a great deal to have toxic effects. So the drinks that I've found that dogs are more drawn to are things like Baileys, things that are creamy. Some dogs like the smell of beer, which is really bad because there's a couple of reasons why anything to do with yeast is a bad idea with dogs. So yes, it is possible that dogs will voluntarily consume alcohol. It's up to us to keep them away from it because it very quickly will kill them.
And is it because, bluntly, if you leave something, a plate or a glass, within a dog's height, they will just try and taste it?
Yeah, they will. But also some do get a taste for it and will actively seek it out. So you just have to make sure you're aware that dogs are drawn to things that aren't good for them. Like it's recently been discovered that we've known that dogs are randomly allergic to eating grapes and raisins, and it is all connected. We think that there's something in grapes, it might be something, a very, very small ingredient that really does them huge kidney damage. So just keep away the human foods, the human drinks, because it's very, very quickly, they do get drunk, they do get all the same symptoms that humans get from alcohol, only very, very rapidly, and then they die. So
wow.
Poisons Hotline if this ever happens to you by accident. Certainly nothing that somebody should be doing because it's funny. My husband had an employee that gave his dog alcohol at a Christmas party, and he then sacked that person because the dog was very, very ill. It's one of those things that stupidity may cause people to do silly things, but be aware this could kill especially small dogs very, very quickly.
Top advice. Thanks so much. Beverly Cuddy, the editor of Dogs Today magazine.
Right, coming up, more on this extraordinary story involving Mark Menzies. It's The Colourists with Manvi Varner and Matthew Paris.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Jane Garvey.
And I'm Fee Glover.
Off Air with Jane and Fee is going live.
We are taking to the stage at the amazing Crucible Theatre in Sheffield on Friday, the 31st of May.
It'll be a night full of surprises. We'll have a special guest, we'll involve you in the audience, and we'll embarrass ourselves. You really won't want to miss it.
Well, the surprise is we don't yet know what's in it, so it genuinely is a night of surprises.
Well, you've surprised me already. It's not just us. Our live show is part of an exciting new podcast festival called Crosswires, which is taking place in some really amazing venues across Sheffield from the 31st of May to the 2nd of June.
So other podcasters that you'll be able to see include Katie Price, Catherine Ryan, Ramesh Ranganathan and the original Adam Buxton. But there's also a whole host of free fringe events, family shows, surprise acts and after parties that Jane and I haven't yet been invited to.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Head to crosswires.live for tickets and more information.
Manvi Rana and someone called Matthew on Times Radio.
And this week's Matthew is Matthew Paris. How are you?
Hello.
You look well rested. You're back from your travels?
Yeah, yeah, fantastic.
Very good.
Yes.
I'm sorry to report, though, Manvin's not here again.
I'm so sorry.
I'm beginning to wonder if you're committed to catering at all, Manvi.
I have offered to take requests for next time. So I will bake whatever you want for next time to make up for not being there now. So,
I walked in this morning all the way from home in the belief that there would be a donut waiting for me.
I'm sorry, Manfred.
Matthew, honestly, get your request in. Next time you're there, I promise.
What's your best?
I will bake fresh.
There was a thing that you did. What was the thing that you did that was warm and had raspberries in it?
Oh, yes.
the cake with raspberries. Sort of,
was it like frangipani?
An amaretti.
Yes.
Yes.
Let's have that next time you're in.
Right, done.
Yeah,
done.
Fine.
Promise.
Good. Anyway, that was Manvi Varner and Matthew Paris there. No. Right. Let's talk about this extraordinary story then. Well, I suppose there were two extraordinary stories swirling around in politics right now. There has been the Angela Rayner one. She, you know, you wrote about that in the Times this week, Matthew. And then along comes just everyone saying, is there nothing else to talk about? And the Tories were, well, here we are. Mark Menzies, Conservative MP, under investigations following allegations he used thousands of pounds of party campaign funds to pay medical expenses and what he called bad people. Matthew, what on earth is going on?
People do get themselves into the most awful mess, don't they? You said, can you imagine calling somebody at 3 a.m. and asking for money because you've been trapped by bad people on the assumption that this kind of thing doesn't happen to anybody else? But it does. People just get themselves into terrible tangles, and this man obviously has.
Manveen, somebody's been in touch saying, Ian's got in touch, saying, just wondering whether the people in the mainstream media should be more lenient on MPs. There's an expectation they should be squeaky clean and to always have to be, to have always has been so. Yet as long as they're good at the job they're required to do, should it matter? There are countless workers, managers, board directors and such that have done stuff, yet we get so hung up on non-work-related shenanigans of MPs. If you took 100 average people, you'd find a proportion that have had affairs, done or do drugs, avoid tax and break the law in all sorts of minor ways. Should we all take an honest look at ourselves and those around you before casting judgment?
So you see, that's where I'd go back to what exactly what Matthew's just talked about, what you sort of began with, which is who hasn't called somebody at 3 a.m., a 78-year-old at 3 a.m. demanding money because they're being held. I think it depends. I think over the last few years, you know, there is much more emphasis on privacy. I think we're less bothered about things like affairs. I just don't think most people think that impacts the way you do your job. I think, you know, the Angela Rayner thing has been interesting because I think a lot of people are going, nah, it feels like quite a minor infringement. You know, I mean, it's not something that she could be done for now anyway, legally. But sort of, you know, her looking at ways of minimizing tax. I remember George Osborne as Chancellor, or just before he was Chancellor, sort of saying, let me tell you how to avoid paying inheritance tax. You know, none of that, I think, is really going to shock people. Whereas this just sort of, it sets the bar in a different way. I think not many people will have experienced a situation where they've had to steal basically party funds.
Well, that's the crucial point.
You see what I mean? Like, this isn't just sort of, you know, you're not squeaky clean in the way that you live your life. This is a massive infringement. He's had to call up a 78-year-old who used to run the party, take her savings and then reimburse her with money that was supposed to be for the campaign. There's party money going into this.
That's the crucial point, isn't it?
What I'm really shocked by is how the Conservative Party had to wait for the Times to report this to suspend the whip when they've been aware of it for a while. Well, that seems shocking.
That's the allegation. There's no doubt that he phoned for the money. The allegation that he intended, which to be guilty of stealing, you have to intend, he intended to steal party funds, is only an allegation. I think it's worth making that clear.
He hasn't repaid any of the money he received from the Business Group Fund.
No. And maybe he wasn't going to, maybe he was, who knows. But Manveen has caused me to row back a little on what I just said, you know, that this could have happened to all of us. I think a certain kind of person is attracted into politics, and I don't exempt myself from that analysis.
That's so interesting.
I think, well, just think about it. If you want to get a seat, you have a rather small chance of being selected anywhere. If you're selected, you may not have a good chance of being elected. If elected, you will be a backbencher. You won't have much of a chance of being a junior minister. If a junior minister, little chance of being a cabinet minister. If a cabinet minister, still a minority chance of being prime minister. And yet, an awful lot of men and women go into politics dreaming that they're going to be prime minister. What sort of mental type are these people? They're likely to be people with an exaggerated sense of their own invulnerability, an exaggerated sense of the odds against them. They're likely to be gamblers. They're likely to be risk takers. They're likely to be attention seekers. And so you do not actually get, I think, a typical representative, typical examples of members of voters generally in the House of Commons. They attract a particular kind of person.
And the issue of power and ego and entitlement, you know, it's the sort of, there was a rule in Parliament that MPs can go to the front of the queue in the canteen because they're obviously much more important and busy than anyone else who's, you know, doing their job. And that sort of fuels the, you know, one minute you're going to the front of the canteen queue, the next minute you're offering to lobby MPs. Exactly. Yeah. This is even a backbench piece. It's not, you know, anybody with any...
Yes, but I imagine, you know, if we were in a queue in the canteen and Mr. Murdoch came in, we would probably let him go to the front of the queue, wouldn't we?
I mean, I'd go in, I'd load up the train myself.
Yes.
But you know, it sort of ingrains in the idea that before you know it, you think that the money which has been given to your campaign funds is there for your disposal, or your position in the division lobby is there for your...
No, I don't think it's a sense of entitlement. I think it's a mistaken belief that you're unlikely to be found out. Mm. And most, of course, are not found out, and they weren't in my day in the House of Commons, and they never have been. And extraordinary indiscretions, scandals like this, have come to light all through the centuries amongst members of Parliament. When I was a member of Parliament, I was cruising for sex on Clapham Common. And that was a really stupid, stupid thing to do. And looking back on it, it's more than 40 years ago now, I can't imagine why I did it or why I thought I wouldn't be caught. I got beaten up, I broke my jaw and lots of ribs, but I was never actually, it never got into the newspapers. Now, why did I do it? I don't know. I think just the kind of person that goes into politics just has this extraordinary sense that they're going to be luckier than others, and that their fortunes are going to turn their way, even though the odds are against them.
Is there also an element of junior backbench nobody MPs? Not that was you were one of those.
Well, I was. Yeah,
but you sort of think, well, it's not going to be a big deal. Nobody know who you know that the you're swimming in a
no. Menzies will have known
at
once that this was an absolute catastrophe.
Something about when you have a public life that you sort of feel like you should make the most of the private sphere. Is there something about being in the spotlight that makes you behave more recklessly the moment you think you're away from it?
No, I think it's something about wanting to be in the spotlight that turns you into a reckless person, so to speak.
Wow.
The two go hand in hand. It's somewhat true of media people too. I mean, all of us have cast aside any idea of a boring but steady and reliable career to take our chances.
Yeah.
Most people wouldn't.
Is the recklessness which risks bringing you down a prerequisite of getting on?
Yes.
A sort of gambling, risk-taking...
Absolutely.
It's not a separate issue. It's precisely what means you get on.
Yeah, well, think of the leading figures we know about now in politics, the personalities. They are all personalities. Mm. Dull, boring, cautious people with blameless home lives are not, represented in any proportion to their numbers amongst the general population in the House of Commons. There are a few of them, and some go far, but not many.
It's interesting, obviously we should stress, Ranvi, that there are loads of MPs that I'm sure lead incredibly boring lives and don't get themselves into any sort of... But if you look about, so, you know, you had sort of David Cameron, he was, you know, and the smoking drugs at Eton and all that. It was clearly in his nature to want to bend the rules. Boris Johnson's background is the same. You know, Liz Truss and her affair, upsetting the Turnip Taliban. I don't think anything interesting has ever happened. When Theresa May's scandal comes out, it is going to be wild.
Yeah, and that was a problem for her, actually.
Yeah.
Yes. It was a problem for her that she didn't seem to be a very interesting personality. She no doubt is privately, but it didn't show.
It's true. It looked dull that she didn't have any great scandal to talk about.
Yes.
You know, running through the fields that was embarrassingly bad.
So
people wanted her to be livelier.
Matthew, do you think this will knock on the head talk of Angela Rayner for a while?
It rather depends, I suppose, what the... Is it 12 policemen in Manchester?
Imagine seeing 12 policemen in Manchester. You only get that normally for the Tory party conference.
It rather depends what they come up with. I just can't get myself into the details of what she might or might not have done, what mistakes she might or might not have made. It all just seems so trivial to me. And when you look at some of the billionaire Tories and the Nadim Zahawi, who didn't pay tax that he should have paid and claims and insists that it was a mistake and seemed to have got away with that without any further questions, there seems something hounding about this. Okay, she's a northern woman, she's working class, she traded on Mrs. Thatcher's right to buy and made herself a few thousand pounds by it. She's uppity, she uses insulting words to describe Tories. good, gotcha, you know, put her down, know your place, lass, that kind of thing. I don't like it.
And I don't know if you saw it, Marvin. There was an extraordinary moment on Sky News yesterday where James Daly, who's the deputy chairman of the Conservative Party, was repeatedly asked what he thinks Angela Rayner has done wrong. And he's the one who's made the complaint to the police. And he couldn't say.
Well, I think until this story came along, I don't think most people even knew that it was against the law.
Dead right.
To be registered on the electoral roll somewhere where you're not permanent. I mean, like, I've lived in places where you still get letters, or, you know, for people from the electoral roll who, you know, are still assumed to be living there. I think I've been registered at my parents' place while being a foreign correspondent at some point. You know, like, I just think it's so normal in people's lives, the way we live now. It's not unnatural to be registered somewhere which is a semi-permanent address, but you haven't thought of updating it when you've moved off somewhere else for a bit. I think most people will struggle to see this as massively criminal. And it's odd. I think it's run in a way that seems unnatural. You know, as Matthew was saying, given, you know, the equivalence with things like Nadeem Zahawi, which is a scandal that seemed to sort of pass relatively quickly. And I think I'm even more sort of worried about, really, Michael Ashcroft, who seems to be able to you know, make sort of news whenever he wants to with one of these books. You know, he had that incredibly unfair book on David Cameron, which sort of led the agenda for an awfully long time. Nobody ever sort of seems to question him.
The amount of money that he has avoided paying tax by being a non-dom would buy many, many council houses.
And when he was going into the Lords as a non-dom, I remember investigating him a bit briefly then, and I called up three peers, two Tories, one Labour, all very influential in politics, and every single one of them said, oh, I think he'd tell you I was his greatest enemy. I think he's a terrifying threat to our democracy, but I can't say it out loud because he's vindictive and will write a book about me. So I think actually we should be looking at what he's doing to modern politics.
That Michael Ashcroft is going to write a book about you is to be greeted with horror.
Yeah,
exactly. But, you know, he also pays for the polls, so an awful lot of MPs are sort of reliant on his polling. And we never question him or his reasons for launching a book on any particular person. Mm. And I find it quite disturbing.
Yeah, so it was the David Cameron having sex with a pig story. That was him.
Which, again, I wish he'd sued because it turns out it wasn't true, but it led the news for such a long time. And you think this is insane.
It was such a big story. I remember it overshadowed Lib Dem conference.
Yeah. Which of us can forget it?
Now, let's move away from parliamentary misdemeanours for a moment. Keir Starmer, he seems to be on course to become Prime Minister. According to the latest YouGov poll today, they're still well ahead Labour, ahead of the Conservatives. But how might he compare to other Prime Ministers? Well, YouGov have done some polling for us, and Gemma Connor from YouGov is here to take us through the numbers. Hi, Gemma.
Morning.
So, give us the scores on the doors. How does Keir Starmer compare to previous Prime Ministers?
So if we look back over Prime Ministers from the last 25 years, there's only actually one Prime Minister that people think would do a better job than Starmer, and that's Tony Blair. So 30% say Starmer would be a worse Prime Minister than Tony Blair. 29% say he'd be neither better nor worse. And then of all the other Prime Ministers between Blair and now, Starmer would be better.
Matthew, what do you think is going on there? Is it just that Tony Blair is the longest to go and recency bias against the more recent ones, or have they been generally getting worse?
Now, what's going on there is that Keir Starmer hasn't yet been Prime Minister. And we can always believe that the next one's going to be better than the ones that went before. I think it's as simple as that. I've very little doubt that after he has been Prime Minister, he'll join the ranks of those who say that whoever follows him is going to be better than him.
I'm quite interested in the 11% of people who think he'd be a worse Prime Minister than Liz Truss.
Yes.
Do we need to stage an intervention on them, Gemma?
It's very hard to say, isn't it? But yes, with Liz Truss, 61% think that Keir Starmer would be a better Prime Minister. But if we look at that worst figure, there are 11% that say he would be worse. Time will tell. We still have an election to hold first.
I think we know who they are. They are the national membership of the Conservative Party who selected her as their leader in the first place.
So, yes, just over 60% say he would be better than Liz Truss. 50% say he'd be better than Boris Johnson. 40% say he'd be better than Rishi Sunak. It's a bit closer, though, with David Cameron, isn't it?
Yes, so with David Cameron, 28% say that Starmer would be worse, 32% say that he would be better, and then 20% are somewhere in the middle and they say he'd be neither better nor worse. So it is much tighter with David Cameron.
What do you think, Manveen? Will he be better or worse?
I'm quite surprised, to be honest, because I didn't think people were very excited about Keir Starmer. I thought he was going to win the election because people were voting against the current government rather than for him. So that all of that polling, I think, is pretty astonishing. I mean, we have had a particularly bad run of prime minister, so perhaps it's not a surprise. That 11% who thought Liz Truss would be better is genuinely sort of extraordinary. Makes you sort of wonder about people's sanity. I think he's been quite lucky in a way in that he doesn't have many hard acts to follow. I think the David Cameron, I think was probably more popular when he got elected. And it's only if people now think Keir Starmer would be better, it's because people look back. As Matthew was saying, it's so much easier with hindsight to look at sort of what went wrong. And, I think with David Cameron, people will always think of Brexit and will always think of the way he left the job. Give Keir Starmer a year or two and I'm sure he'll be sort of in a similar situation. But nobody ever sort of comes out looking great.
The problem is, Matthew, being Prime Minister is actually quite hard.
Yeah, very hard. And you mess up, of course. They all mess up.
But the skills it requires. We've got an interesting interview, actually, next week with Tim Shipman, because he's got his new book coming out, which covers the Theresa May period of Prime Minister. And he's got the sort of three tests, or three... You need to know where you want to go strategically. You need to know how to get there. You need to know how to take people with you and communicate that. And actually, having all of those skills is quite difficult. I do think Boris Johnson and Liz Truss, they both underestimated how difficult it was.
Yes. And anyway, those skills on the whole get you into number 10 Downing Street, but they don't get you a fine record of a successful prime minister who accomplished any of the things they promised. I was, unlike Manreen, I was a little surprised at how popular David Cameron appears to be. I mean, he appears to me to be remembered rather more kindly than I would have thought.
Yeah, but Gemma, is he... I suppose it depends how much polling you've done. Is there any sign that him being back as Foreign Secretary is actually rehabilitating him?
Oh, yes.
Yes, it's interesting. So, as was said earlier, it's a bit surprising that Starmer's figures are perhaps as high as they are. But actually, there's this perception that people are voting for Starmer because he's an alternative rather than because he likes that. And that's backed up by other polling that we have. So if you look at our favourability figures, actually 53% of people have an unfavourable opinion of Keir Starmer, which is slightly concerning, really, when we're looking at the voting intention and sort of where we're going with an election coming up. I'm just trying to find the favourability figures, if you can come back to me in seconds.
I was just looking at the really, really striking thing on the David Cameron would be better. Yeah, would he be better or worse than David Cameron? The Remain Leave split is almost exactly reverse. So about 20% say Keir Starmer would be a better Prime Minister than David Cameron amongst leavers, and about 40% say be worse, and it completely flips for Remainers. Mm. So maybe there's that sort of feeling that Remainers haven't fully forgiven. Weirdly, David Cameron viewed more favourably amongst leavers.
Yes, that does seem surprising.
But I think maybe his Remainers still just haven't forgiven him for calling the referendum, maybe.
Yes.
I think leavers are probably even more anti-Starmer.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
That's probably more of the explanation.
As ever in politics, all these things are relative, Manvi.
Inevitably.
Well, maybe we should dig around. Gemma, we'll get you back and we'll dig into David Cameron's poll race. I'd be really interested to see if he personally is putting all that Greens Hill business, another politician getting themselves into a pickle, Matthew?
Yes, though I think he got his fair share of press abuse about that one. Well, he can't be said to have escaped censure.
Manveen Rana and Matthew Powers there. And, of course, you can catch Manveen on the Story podcast, wherever you're listening to this, and catch Matthew Powers in The Times every week with your Times subscription. Just go to thetimes.co.uk. But for now, for me, Matt Jolliet, goodbye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.